I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax, Terminix can help. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast. If your home or business has pests, don't stress it. Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com. Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. He said, it's going to be a bloodbath for the country. And we're arguing about it. Not a bloodbath for our auto industry, not a bloodbath for the imported car market, not a bloodbath for happy Honda days, a bloodbath for the country, with no subsequent retraction or repudiation by Trump of, say, bloodbaths. And we the people trying to stop him, we are arguing about the context, arguing amongst ourselves. And Trump is clearly broke. He tells the court 30 insurance underwriters would not cover his $464 million bond in the New York fraud case, and we're still supposed to believe he's a billionaire. And suddenly he's a billionaire pleading poverty, and boom! The moment he does that, who just reappears out of nowhere but Paul Manafort, the international money spigot and Russian operative. And I'm still more concerned about something else. Where is Jack Smith demanding that Judge Tanya Chutkan revoke Trump's bail and incarcerate him after he violated the gag order in the election subversion case and maligned and threatened and encouraged others to malign and threaten Cassidy Hutchinson? And not just any others, but federal officers who carry guns. Quote, our great Secret Service has totally crushed Cassidy Hutchinson's, who I barely know, made up fake stories about me roughing up Secret Service agents from the back of the Beast limo. Has she now changed her testimony? Will she be prosecuted for what she did and said? Trump has not just violated the gag order in the D.C. subversion case. He has not just violated a gag order that was already pared down in appeal, but still prevents Trump and his counsel from, quote, making or directing others to make public statements about known or reasonably foreseeable witnesses concerning their potential participation in the investigation or in this criminal proceeding, unquote. Pared down, but still clearly barring Trump from even speculating that a likely witness, such as Cassidy Hutchinson, fabricated evidence or testimony or might be prosecuted, and clearly barring Trump from congratulating the Secret Service for having, quote, totally crushed her, and barring Trump from trying to coerce her with questions like, has she now changed her testimony? And for that matter, barring Trump from making public statements about other possible witnesses, like all the members of the Secret Service. And that was only the first part of this psycho's post. What about the unselect J6 committee? They destroyed almost everything, including real evidence and findings. What's going to happen with them? Serious crimes have been committed? Again, the gag order was specifically rearranged to narrow it and yet leave it absolutely clear that he could not threaten nor point at others and hope that they then threatened people investigating him or testifying against him. There's three violations of the gag order by Trump just about Cassidy Hutchinson in one post. There is at least one violation invoking members of the Secret Service, probably way more than just one. And what? One each for the eight members of the House January 6th committee? So there are a dozen violations of the gag order. And where are Jack Smith and Tanya Chutkan? This isn't legal nuance. This isn't novel lawyerly theory. This isn't Trump's first violation of this gag order either. I want his bail revoked today. I want his ass in jail today. I want his lawyers to have to find a Supreme Court judge willing to go out on that dangerous limb and spring him today. He violated the gag order 12 times in about three sentences. Oh, and meanwhile, in Florida, Trump's concierge judge, the former flamenco correspondent of the Miami Nuevo Times, Eileen Cannon, says she wants both the defense and the prosecution to issue competing jury instructions about the impact of the Presidential Records Act on the charges against Trump of, you know, espionage. The lawyers who have seen it say they have never seen anything like it. Moreover, their suggestion is it is so blatantly stupid and unjudicial and prejudiced towards Trump, to say nothing of the fact that the Presidential Records Act doesn't have a damn thing to do with the classified documents and the classified records, that it is alike allowing the defense in a case to argue, attempted murder? What the hell is that? It's so bad that it might lead the appellate court, the 11th Circuit, that keeps overruling this nitwit Trump appointee, to overrule her yet again and suggest, that's enough. You're over your head, lady, and you are off this case. And then we start all over again, and Trump wins by delay. Now about the money. Trump standing there like rich Uncle Pennybags from Monopoly, with the insides of his empty suit pockets turned inside out and hanging there. It's a delightful image. But when you read into the story, you find quickly that this is just another stall. He went to 30 insurers, and they all turned him down because everybody knows for stuff like this, you have to offer cash to guarantee the bond, a high percentage of the final amount you want to borrow. And he didn't offer cash. He offered property. Property which he's also going to lose if he doesn't get a bond somewhere. So why would you underwrite a bond on his behalf if he could lose the assets in question? Well, you wouldn't. It is, as Trump's lawyers wrote, a practical impossibility. But you would offer property instead of cash in the event you wanted to get turned down, so you could go to the judge and ask that the whole bond thing get postponed until after the appeals court hears the whole case all over again. It's another stall. Yet it's a stall with a curious sting in its tail. The day he tries this stall, the Washington Post reports that Paul Manafort is back in Trump land, like Banquo's ghost wandering onto the stage in Macbeth. Trump is considering bringing Paul Manafort back to run part of his campaign again, just like in 2016. Russia! Manafort Russian operative and already a proven Trump asset, so much so that Trump had to pardon him for felony convictions. Russia! Because he's seemingly tied into every illicit money source in the known world. Russia! And what does Trump want Paul Manafort to do on the campaign? He wants him to run the 2024 Republican convention in Milwaukee, like the 2016 Republican convention in Cleveland, the one at which Trump met all those Russians backstage. And before you knew it, the Republican Party had changed one key but seemingly obscure part of its campaign platform when they went from vehemently supporting this small democracy somewhere under threat to selling that small democracy out. You know, the convention when Manafort, who had worked for pro-Russian oligarchs in Ukraine as long ago as 2004, when Paul Manafort suddenly got Trump, suddenly to get the GOP to sell out Ukraine. Trump says he has no money, and all of a sudden, here is the reanimated corpse of Paul Manafort. That'd be the Paul Manafort who a bipartisan Senate committee report in 2020 declared a grave intelligence risk, and who is already his own living, breathing Russian pipeline. While Trump needs money, and while the Biden administration is apparently still planning on giving Trump the traditional intelligence briefings they give to all the opposition presidential candidates because, you know, there's still a few documents Trump hasn't stolen yet and Paul Manafort hasn't seen yet. You want to give him an intelligence briefing? Okay, here's what you do. You tell Trump, quote, person, woman, man, camera, TV. You tell him that's also an intelligence briefing. Not only will we keep him from selling more secrets or stealing more secrets or having Manafort do whatever with the secrets, but Trump will be delighted. He'll tell the story every goddamn chance he gets and thinks it's going to show he's such an intelligent guy. And he can tell all the other inmates about it when Judge Chutkan gets off her butt and revokes his bail for having violated the gag order in that case 12 times. Now, bloodbath and beyond. Sure, he didn't really mean it. He merely sent out a fundraising email yesterday. Subject line, bloodbath! Which ended with, deliver the liars and the fake news a message that they'll never forget. And he was only talking about the bloodbath within the confines of the foreign car market and manufacturing in Mexico, but Speaker of the House Mike Johnson told Republicans at a private event in Texas, quote, I think it was obvious for anyone who takes the time to watch his speech and to realize what he was saying. Really, he was 100% correct. And no, Trump didn't really mean it, but he told Fox, quote, if you don't use certain rhetoric, if you don't use certain words that maybe aren't very nice words, nothing will happen. Yes. Yes. You know what won't happen if you don't use certain words? A bloodbath won't happen. And you and I expect this. He's been saying something obviously violent or vile or virulent or racist or anti-Semitic or homophobic or sexist every week for a decade. And we expect him to deny it. And we expect his little Renfields, like this worm Johnson, to echo the cover story. Well, he's living in a little space between the meetings. And we expect them to say, he didn't mean that kind of bloodbath. He meant this kind of bloodbath. But honest to God, we, the pro-democracy, anti-Trump forces, we are still in the middle of an argument with ourselves over whether a psychopathic would-be dictator and Hitler wannabe who values no human life except his own and whose mental state is rapidly deteriorating and who has used the threat of political violence for a decade and uses apocalyptically violent language to enrage his cult and who tried to get his thugs to overthrow our government and who is now obsessed with personal revenge, we are in the middle of an argument over whether Trump really meant to threaten an actual bloodbath if he is not restored to power, or if he just meant it metaphorically and economically, and only within the limited context of foreign imports in the automobile industry. We're actually arguing over this. We, the people who will save this democracy or go to Trump brand re-education concentration hotels, because we didn't save the democracy. We are wasting our time arguing over this. And the media, the mainstream media, the legacy media, the lethargy media, call them what you will, awakened like Rip Van Winkle to the reality of Trump's years of the rhetoric of a mass murderer, and every one of them, down to goddamned NBC News, headlined the bloodbath and hand-wrung over the bloodbath and publicized the bloodbath and got the message out about the bloodbath to at least a comparative handful of independents or low-info voters. And usually reliable, right-on-the-money people like Ian Bremmer are looking at the biggest, fattest, healthiest yield of anti-Trump revulsion in years and anti-Trump horror in years. And Ian Bremmer's reaction is, it's disingenuous and embarrassing. And the mainstream media is proving incapable of turning the needle down from 11. And I'm thinking, the media is at 11 about Trump? 11. What, out of 1,000? Because, hey, guess what? Giving Trump the benefit of the doubt, and why are you doing that? When he tweeted statistically impossible to have lost the 2020 election, big protest in D.C. on January 6th, be there, will be wild. He meant that the speeches would be wild. And maybe he really was going out on a limb. Maybe he also meant the buffet at the Willard Hotel would also be wild. He said, bloodbath in the country. And he said bloodbath at the same time he was saying immigrants are not really people. And as he was threatening to imprison the January 6th committee and to let the January 6th terrorists escape, and he replaced the real national anthem with a new one in which he speaks. And oh, by the way, he repeated his call to terminate the Constitution, but I'm sure he meant bloodbath as in a nice hot bath that will make your blood circulate healthier in the bath.
And you're not going to be able to sell those guys. If I get elected, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it.
Ladies and gentlemen, please rise for the horribly and unfairly treated January 6th hostages.
And of course, this threat of political violence, if he is not given power, the presidency with total immunity, by the way, total veto power over every federal employee, Supreme Court on his side by a 2-to-1 margin, with every cop in the nation immunized from prosecution by him and thus personally beholden to him after he invokes the Insurrection Act and suspends all the, you know, laws on day one as a dictator. He's never said anything like that before. Not once has he even used the blood imagery before either.
It is a very sad thing for our country, It's poisoning the blood of our country. It's so bad, and people are coming in with disease.
And the radical left thugs that live like vermin within the confines of our country.
I don't think the people of the United States would stand for it. If it happened, I think you'd have problems in this country, the likes of which perhaps we've never seen before. I don't think the people of the United States would stand for it.
What kind of problems, Mr. President?
I think they'd have big problems. Big problems. I just don't think they'd stand for it. They will not sit still and stand for this ultimate of hoaxes.
You can't sit home. If you're sick as a dog, you say, darling, I've got to make it. Even if you vote and then pass away, it's worth it.
It'll be bedlam in the country. It's a very bad thing.
If there's a prosecution of Donald Trump for mishandling classified information after the Clinton debacle, which you presided over and did a hell of a good job, there'll be riots in the streets.
And the riots, he promised, never mind Lindsey Graham if he didn't get the nomination in 2016, and the violence in the streets he promised in 2020, and the terrible things he promised in 2023. Yeah, I don't see it. I don't see any theme about blood or violence, or if you don't elect me, my mobs will kill you. The media is overreacting. This knob is not supposed to go to 11. Just because this Sunday is the first anniversary of him saying that if he was arrested over the Stormy Daniels hush money, the nation would be subjected to, quote, death and destruction. I'm sure he only meant about foreign cars. The death and destruction of foreign cars. Seriously. As everybody around Trump denied he meant bloodbath, No, only a bloodbath in terms of, you know, Toyota-thon. A final set of questions. This is the creature who has poisoned the blood of our nation, and he said something grotesque enough to break through the standard media reaction of, it's just Trump. Let's worry about Biden's new sneakers. And our side is saying, yeah, there are bloodbaths, and then there are bloodbaths. Did Trump respond by renouncing violence? Did he deny that he meant to use the word bloodbath? Did he even renounce just bloodbaths? Did he renounce bloodbaths? Just renounce the bath part. Just renounce them as, say, compared to lower volume blood loss, like spurts or sprays, or splatters, or stains, or blood scratches, or whatever you call it when you put leeches on. Did he renounce blood leeches? We're arguing about this. Also of interest here, first rule of running for office. Spell your own name right on all of your own press releases. First rule of martyring a murder victim for your racist cause, get her name right. And yet another Republican has just failed that bar. And the first rule of Fox News, when your baby Hitler is in trouble because he threatened a bloodbath, find a false equivalent somewhere. Take something somebody said, or if you can't find that, take something somebody didn't say, and you hold them up and make them the equivalent of Trump and call it a blue bloodbath. And guess who they found? Guess who they are equating with a former president of the United States? Me. I'm the blue bloodbath. They claimed I hinted at Trump's assassination when in fact I hinted at, as I have for a decade, him dying in prison. Of course, Fox has been doing crap like this with me since 1996. That's next in an all-new edition of Countdown.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, you dare.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
This is Countdown with Keith Olbermann.
Postscripts to the news, some headlines, some updates, some snark, some predictions. Dateline, Washington, D.C. The Environmental Protection Agency has finally, officially, and utterly banned asbestos, the carcinogen still in use today, even though it was supposed to have been banned in 1989. University of Florida professor Michael Johnson with the joke, quote, "Time for MAGA to start huffing asbestos because Biden says it's bad for you." Dateline North Carolina. Well, Trump has a winner in his new RNC chairman, Michael Whatley. The former Brooks Brothers rioter from 2000 and election denier from 2020 went on Fox News and was unable to get through the new Trump campaign slogan once without having the truth escape. Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago under Trump? Trump's Republican National Committee chair says, you bet your ass you're better now than you were 4 years ago under Trump.
Were you better off 4 years ago than you are today? The answer for this entire country is no. I mean, yeah, we are better off today, or we will.
The new Trump RNC chairman's first task will be to find the next new Trump RNC chairman. Dateline New York City, our extraordinary Mayor Eric Adams has now been sued by a former colleague from their days in the police department using the same survivor's law by which E. Jean Carroll sued Trump. Lorna Beach Mathura has filed on Adams saying that when she went to him in 1993 for help with an issue with a job, he demanded help with an issue with a job. That's not just snide writing on my part. Quoting the suit, Adams told plaintiff that he thought he could help her, but that he, quote, also needed some help, unquote, and began rubbing his penis through his clothes with his hand, unquote. At least he didn't say God had told him to ask her. Don't blame me. I voted for the garbage lady. flatline Bluffdale, Nevada. At a campaign stop there, half-elephant Senator Tommy Tuberville revealed that America is, quote, losing our kids to a satanic cult. We've got to get back to the Constitution. With that, Senator Tuberville held up a pocket edition of the Constitution and waved it towards the crowd, which is when a lot of the folks realized there that Tuberville was holding the Constitution book upside down. Dateline Cheyenne, Wyoming. Here we go again. This poor woman allegedly murdered by an undocumented immigrant, Lakin Riley. Republicans thought that they could exploit her death to push the Trump cause. All they managed to do is exploit her death and repeatedly get her name wrong. First, it was Marjorie Taylor Greene, who later quoted herself telling President Biden at the State of the Union that her name was Lincoln Riley. Then Greene did a live interview in which she called her Lincoln Riley. Then Trump signed a picture of her in which he misspelled Lakin Riley. The next fail, Wyoming Senator John Barrasso, as in, well, you know what the name sounds like.
Joe Biden apologized for the murder of Lincoln, of Lakin Riley for calling him.
Dateline East Hampton, New York. Bad enough to get somebody else's name wrong. How about your own name? John Avlon, the former Daily Beast editor who famously wrote an entire both-sides book about the political extremes and throughout it never once realized the term wingnut was only used about and by right-wingers, has hit a real block. The spelling of his own name. Avlon is running for Congress, and sure enough, he has put out a press release thanking the East Hampton Democratic Party for its endorsement of, quote, John Avalon, A-V-A-L-O-N. The candidate's name is Avlon, A-V-L-O-N. If it makes him feel any better, he also misspelled East Hampton. And Dateline Rifle, Colorado. Hello. Lauren Boebert is back with a Boebert Bible Bobble. We know nothing pleases God except faith, she said in a Rumble podcast or Just Fans thing or whatever the hell they do on Rumble. It's not our works that please him, unquote. Au contraire, mon frère. Actually, in James 2, 14 to 17, quote, if a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and you say, go in peace, be warmed and filled, without giving him the things they need for the body, what good is that? Asks the Bible. Faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. So Lauren Boebert has the Bible exactly backwards. Well, there's your problem right there. Please, madam, stick to what you know. Thank you, Nancy Faust. Is that Boebert reaching across the aisle again? Still ahead of us on this all-new edition of Countdown. This has been going on since 1996. Rupert Murdoch's Fox News made up a story about me again, this one that I, quote, hinted at a Trump assassination, when I am on record for 8 years now insisting, no, I want him convicted so he can die in prison. This goes up on the wall next to the Murdoch New York Post story claiming I ripped the name plaque off my door and threw it at one of my own producers. Yeah, I did that, except the plaque was made out of computer paper. It was a piece of paper I threw at the guy. It was a joke. Things I Promised Not to Tell, edition 3142 of Murdoch Makes Crap Up, next. There are still more idiots to talk about. The daily roundup of the miscreants, morons, and Dunning-Kruger effect specimens who constitute today's worst persons in the world besides Murdoch. First, the bronze. Worse, baseball's San Francisco Giants. They announced that they and their public address announcer for almost the quarter of the century, Ronnell Brooks Moon, had mutually agreed to part ways after being unable to reach an agreement on a new contract. In fact, it is beginning to appear that the Giants fired her. As she was described in one column, she's the team's most visible non-playing black employee. But hell, if you look at the Giants roster, you can leave out non-playing. Another veteran Bay Area baseball reporter says there is much more to this story to come, and it's likely this, and I quote from Ann Killian's column in the San Francisco Chronicle, quote, "It's a terrible move for a team whose majority owner, Charles Johnson, funds right-wing politicians that were supportive of undermining a Democratic election and who have tried to disenfranchise black voters across America. Brooks Moon was one of the few in the Giants organization to publicly decry Johnson's political activity. She was also outspoken in 2020 in support of Black Lives Matter. It doesn't take a crazy Johnson-backed conspiracy theorist to connect the dots," unquote. Yeah, the Giants owner is one ugly, tiny Johnson. And he's a high-octane Trump nut who just fired the fans' favorite person with the franchise who isn't one of their announcers or Willie Mays. Hopefully his customers beat the ever-loving financial crap out of this guy Johnson. The runner-up, worser, Kristi Noem. First, we saw the governor of South Dakota post a rambling 5-minute video about how she got a great new smile at some dentist's office in Texas. This video had everything in it except the quote, "Is this real life?" South Dakota Democrats demanded an investigation of whether or not Noem used state funds to travel to Texas for the caps or the straightening or the implants or whatever they did to her mouth. South Dakota Republicans demanded an investigation of why she didn't get all the work done in South Dakota. Then Governor Noem went back online and started pitching coffee and then custom-made insoles and a book. Everything except Noem Steaks and Noem University. Look, Governor Noem is this close to selling her own lingerie. But our winner, the worst, the Republican National Committee, Lara Trump, proprietor, not only did the co-chair, Michael Whatley, say, "No, of course we're not better off than we were 4 years ago. That's crazy thinking. Oh, my God, what did I just say? Thanks, Mike." But also the RNC Research Twitter account posted a video intended to mock President Biden as they keep trying to reignite the Biden age plot. Quote, "Biden slowly descends the Capitol steps," ran the caption to the video, "as his handlers keep a watchful eye, points toward the motorcade, and shuffles back into his limo. Vigor," unquote. About the handlers from the video, two guys, one on either side of the president, neither of whom the Republican National Committee appears to have recognized. Now, the one on the left, Leo Varadkar, the Prime Minister of Ireland, well, okay, you're with the Republican National Committee. Why would you recognize any foreigner besides Putin? But the guy walking next to the president on the right, the little guy with the horn-rimmed glasses and that creepy look on his face, he doesn't look at all familiar to you, boys? You haven't seen him lately anywhere? That's, I don't know how to tell you this. That Republican National Committee is the Republican Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. Mike Johnson, you didn't recognize Mike Johnson, your own Speaker of the House standing next to President Biden. The Republican National Committee, we're the RNC, we agree, you're not better off than you were 4 years ago, and we don't know who the hell the Republican Speaker of the House is. The Republican National Committee, helping America defeat Trump and all the down-ballot Republicans. Today's worst, what am I saying? Best persons in the world!
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix. Terminix can't help you run for office or take on the country's biggest problems, but they can help you solve one of the peskiest problems at home, pests. You know, the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, even the termites in the walls. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control. Their expertly trained technicians may not know intricate political strategy, but they know their local pest pressures. And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good. Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere. So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it, Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com to book online today. Number one story on the countdown and my favorite topic, me and things I promised not to tell. And here we go again. Rupert Murdoch's, quote, news outlets, unquote, shooting themselves in the groin yet again while they were aiming at me. A little timeline is required on this one. April 1865, Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States, was assassinated. May 2020, maybe earlier, May 2020 was the earliest I remembered or found. Trump started claiming he had been treated far worse than Abraham Lincoln had. March 16th, 2024, Trump said it again. Then Biden-Harris headquarters tweets the clip, adding, Trump says he's been treated worse than Abraham Lincoln, who was assassinated. Also March 16th, 2024, I retweeted that, adding, there's always the hope. March 18th, 2024, Fox News publishes a story first headlined, Keith Olbermann appears to hope for Trump assassination, but the headline was then changed to Keith Olbermann sparks outrage by hinting at Trump assassination with a blue stripe over my face reading, Blue Bloodbath, meaning on some level I am the same as Trump to the New York Post and the Fox News and all the rest of Murdoch's outlets. Well, I was tempted to answer this by saying I was just referring to the auto industry. In reality, obviously, I was and am hoping that Trump will be right and that he will be treated worse than Abraham Lincoln, something worse than assassination, which would be that Trump is convicted and dies in prison. I don't know how many times I have said this. Maybe more than Trump's ludicrous charge that he's been treated worse than Lincoln. I may have actually said it more than he has said that. I think I first said, I hope he dies in prison. I expect he dies in prison in 2016. This is because I hope he dies in prison. But of course, the point of this is Murdoch and Fox, and especially the New York Post, have been doing this to me since about 1996. Always getting it wrong. Ever since I caught the Post in a lie that year about a couple of hockey players that it claimed had been thrown out of a New York City bar for knocking over tables to the horror of customers, when in fact I was with them, and they left the place in their own form of horror because as one of them, Eric Lindros, stood up, he almost knocked over the chair he was sitting in. He said to the other, John LeClaire, I think I've had enough. We got to go home, Johnny. And they politely left, but not before asking if I needed a lift. In 2001, the Post slammed me because I attended a New York Mets game while wearing cargo shorts. A few years later, the Post showed a picture somebody had snapped of me leaning against one of the gates of Central Park here in New York and said I was alone and depressed. Actually, I was alone and early to my dental appointment across the street, and I was trying to talk myself into actually going into my doctor's office. There was a brief interruption in the year during the 2.5 years or so that I worked for Murdoch in sports, a brief interruption in these constantly hilarious stories, before Murdoch personally fired me after I had reported, with his office's full approval in advance, that he was working behind the scenes to sell the Los Angeles Dodgers baseball team, which he was. Murdoch later boasted about firing me, but he didn't say that. He didn't boast about it until after he had sold the LA Dodgers baseball team. The origin of the Post's quarter century of badly aimed shots at me stems from that firing. When Murdoch fired me, his minions did it slowly in stages over the course of a couple of days in hopes that they could get me angry and bait me into attacking Fox and News Corp in the newspapers so that then they could fire me for cause. That way they wouldn't owe me the rest of the money on my contract. Instead, as I've mentioned here before, given the choice between waiting 8 months to insult someone and getting a lot of money or getting no money and yelling at them right now, I'll always wait the 8 months. I remained quiet for 8 lovely months, and Rupert had to pay me $100,000 a month to do that. Best job I ever had. So whenever this happens and somebody says, why don't you sue Murdoch or sue News Corp, sue the New York Post, I always say, what kind of money could I get from them that could hurt them more than that $800,000 back in 2001? Also, most of the stuff they do is so hilariously wrong, like the worse than Lincoln story, that it's transparently desperate. But twice they threatened me with stories that I had to take some action about. Once, they completely made one up, and once, they ran a story, even though the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security specifically asked them not to run it. The obligatory reminder before I tell you those two stories: you should never believe any source story you read in the New York Post, or indeed on any media outlet owned by the Murdochs, like Fox. They occasionally report real things, but just as often, they make stuff up. Not exaggerate or get slightly wrong or twist, but utterly fabricate. On April 11th, 2005, the New York Post was to run exactly the kind of story I'm talking about. Only under threat of multiple lawsuits did they actually spike it. I hadn't told this story before, but I was reminded of it. I think going through the mechanics of it will illustrate just how evil an organization News Corp actually is, and more importantly, how unreliable it is as a source of news. As a New York Post page 6 gossip story, this one, though, had everything. It attacked MSNBC. It had quotes from informed sources, and even at one point, it had a witness. Now, the witness disappeared during the evolution of this story, but at one point it had a witness. It had somebody prominent insulting Peter Jennings, the newscaster, right after he had revealed he had lung cancer. And it was constructed in such a way that if I did not comment on it, they could print the story, then come back the next day, rehash it, and add that I was still refusing to comment on it. But there was one overriding problem. It was a complete fabrication, and thus it was full of events that didn't happen and people who did not exist. New York Post page 6 contacted MSNBC's then media relations guy Jeremy Gaines on Thursday, April 7th, 2005, with the following story. Keith Olbermann, a, quote, frequent critic of President Bush, had refused to anchor the coverage of the death of Pope John Paul II, pretended to be ill, and called in sick instead. There was, as I suggested earlier, a major problem here. I had anchored the coverage of the death of Pope John Paul II. I had been anchoring the primetime coverage for hours each weeknight, day after day, leading up to the pontiff's passing. There were viewers who had seen me. There were studio staffers. Carl Bernstein was there. He was the in-studio papal expert. He was on the air with me every night for like six nights in a row. There were videotapes. Joe Torre, then the manager of the New York Yankees, called me to compliment me on my reverential coverage of the Pope's illness. That did not stop the New York Post. In the first version that Page Six told us it was going to print, their unnamed source had been on board an Amtrak Acela train going from Washington, D.C. to New York, sitting near my agent as my agent talked to somebody on a cell phone. This is apparently a very favorite construction when the New York Post wants to make up a story about somebody. Their witness said my agent complained that I had had a, quote, meltdown after, quote, calling in sick rather than anchoring the papal coverage, which I anchored. But there was more. Quote, Ulderman, a frequent critic of the president's policies, said it was better in sports. They quoted my agent quoting me into the phone. I'll be dealing with this all day now. Apart from the fact that I had anchored the coverage they said I had not anchored, there was another major flaw in this story. My agent was not on a train from Washington to New York on the day in question, or the week in question, or the month, or in fact, the year in question. My agent told me she thought she had once been on a train from Washington to New York in the year 1967. My agent at that time lived atop Mount Shasta in California and so seldom left there that when she once drove to town to get the mail, I asked her for the details of her trip because I jokingly suggested to her we should lead the newscast with it. So, the next day, Friday, April 8th, 2005, New York Post Page Six came back with a different version of this same story. They had misheard their source. Of course, it wasn't my agent on the train from D.C. to New York. It was a woman who worked for my agent, a woman named Susan. A woman named Susan, whom I had, they would report, already phoned three times that morning, and I was to meet her urgently at the boathouse in Central Park. Presumably because meeting her in the middle of Penn Station when she got off that train would have been a little too public. MSNBC's Jeremy Gaines responded again with some irrefutable refutations. Nobody named Susan worked for my agent. In fact, nobody at all worked for my agent. She was independent. She had a working relationship with a small agency in Los Angeles, and basically they covered her phone calls when she was on vacation, which she almost never was because she never left the top of Mount effing Shasta. We called that agency, and they confirmed that not only did they not have anybody working for them named Susan, but nobody from that agency was even on the East Coast, or had been, so far that entire year. At this point, I called the television columnist of the New York Post and off the record explained to him that I was kind of furious and this time I was actually going to sue, but that NBC was far angrier than I was and that they were going to sue as well and sue the editor of Page Six personally. I calmly went through the facts of this. This guy, the TV guy, had a conscience. He sighed. He said he got those kind of calls more often than I would believe. And I said, no, I believe it. And he said he would go to the editor of Page Six and explain somebody was lying to him, the editor, and he was going to get himself sued into bankruptcy over a really obviously untrue and completely disproved story. Okay, so now a couple hours later, New York Post Page Six calls again, demanding a comment from me on the third different version of their exhaustive papal scoop. No, the woman their witness heard, who they first said was my agent, then said she had gotten it wrong. It was a woman named Susan who worked for my agent. She had now become a woman who worked for my agent whose name the witness never heard, but she was talking to somebody else named Susan. And there was an additional quote now thrown in. I'll be dealing this all day now had morphed into I'll be dealing with this all day now. The same week Peter Jennings makes his announcement about having lung cancer, this idiot, a frequent critic of President Bush, is sitting around in his pajamas calling me about this. I'll spare you how I know this was not true. It has something to do with the fact that I don't wear pajamas. Years later, a former gossip reporter in Murdoch's employ explained to me that his celebrity and gossip people are taught never to back down from a confrontation, and that if the subject of one of their hit jobs fires back or tries to refute or especially threatens legal action, to keep making the story worse and worse for them. And in the first decade of this century, anyway, you were supposed to try to work in a defense of George W. Bush. But there's also what she said they called an emergency exit. If there is no question that the story is nonsensical, if the basic spine of the story does not line up with provable facts, just abandon it. Abandon it. Don't tell the subject of your attack that you are abandoning it. Just don't make any more phone calls. Don't send any more emails about it. Just vanish. Just disappear the story. And then send the name of the subject of the story that you've just punted. Send it around to all the other Murdoch operations to see if they can come up with any dirt on the subject to punish them for fighting back against Rupert Murdoch's lies. So they abandoned the story, and it took the New York Post a year and a half to get me back, and to get back the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI. On September 26, 2006, I opened an envelope bearing a California postmark at my home in New York. I shouldn't have done it, but bluntly, I'll confess to this, I thought it was some baseball cards I had bought off eBay. Well, it wasn't. The envelope contained a sticky substance, looked like Drano mixed with talcum powder, and it fell out. An accompanying note said it was anthrax, and now I and other liberals would get a taste of our own medicine. Even reading those chilling words and having covered the actual anthrax letters, terrorist attacks of 2001 when I was with CNN, I knew it wasn't anthrax. The guy who supposedly sent the actual anthrax in 2001 was an expert in the field, and even he mishandled the stuff so badly that supposedly he gave himself anthrax and died of it. On the other hand, I know the odds were impossible, but what if I was wrong? My apartment building was filled with little old ladies who had lived there since Roosevelt was president. I only assumed that meant Franklin, not Theodore. The odds were, I don't know, one in a billion that it was anthrax? But who was I to dismiss this one in a billion chance that these little old ladies were going to get anthrax? Who was I to make that call? So instead, I made a call. I called the FBI. Well, it was quite an evening. The cops showed up. The FBI showed up. They said, of course, it's not anthrax, but we have to act like it is. Welcome to our new world. The hazmat squad came in. They set up a command post in the building. They swept my apartment. They said, okay, now you have to go to the emergency room for tests. And I said, it's not anthrax. You just said so. And they said, if we have to do this, you have to do this too. I laughed. Plus, if you don't, we can arrest you as a threat to public health, and we can make you go to the hospital. So out I went into an ambulance, dressed in a hazmat suit, one size too small, that really cut in the groin. I spent the night getting checked out. The FBI then called and said, it's like Drano with ivory soap flakes. But they also said there had been other letters that had arrived that night and the night before, sent to people like the chairman of CBS and David Letterman's office and Nancy Pelosi and some poor guy who happened to have the name John Stewart, who was not the John Stewart. And they couldn't make me do this, but it would really help if I did not report what happened on my TV show that night, just for the one day. Do it tomorrow, because they had a lead on the guy who had sent all these letters, and they didn't want to scare him off. And I said, sure, I'm a patriot. The next day, while we were still observing the embargo on the story, my story, planning to run it at 8 o'clock at night, New York Post page 6 led with a picture of me with the headline, Powder Puff Spooks Keith. And making sure to identify me as, quote, a frequent critic of President Bush's policies, the New York Post mocked me for not just assuming it was fake anthrax and ignoring it, and claimed I insisted the cops should take me to the hospital. Quote, whether they gave him a lollipop on the way out isn't known. By the way, one of the actual anthrax letters in 2001, one of the letters with actual anthrax in it that got some people sick and killed a little old lady, had been mailed to the New York Post, and one of their staffers had contracted anthrax, and still, this was their attitude towards anthrax threats. Anyway, as it turned out, there was a guy in California sending out these threatening letters, each with fake anthrax, to about a dozen people. He sent me four of them, ultimately. I soon knew the FBI guys by their first names. I pointed out to FBI Doug that the last envelope I received had a barcode on it. Maybe they could track the guy that way. And he said, oh, you're right. And the next thing I knew, the FBI had just videotaped the suspect, mailing yet another letter to me, the fifth, from his home in Woodland Hills, California. And I swear to God, he actually lived in his mother's basement at age 37 or something. And FBI Doug said, do we have your permission to pull a letter out of the mailbox and open it? I said, sure. And the next thing I knew, the guy was sentenced to prison for like 18 months. But not before FBI Doug said, by the way, that barcode you noticed, it connected to the post office here. And that's where we found his address. And we also found the fact that he purchased a postal money order for $15 made out to the Catherine Harris for Florida Senate campaign, if you remember her from Gore v. Bush, and his online history. We looked that all up. It's all about how she, Catherine Harris, and some woman named Laura something or another, they are the most beautiful women in history. And I said, Laura, Laura Ingram. And FBI Doug said, yeah, that's it. Laura Ingraham. And if that isn't 10 years of my life in one sentence, courtesy of the New York effing Post, I don't know what is. I've done all the damage I can do here. Thank you for listening. Countdown musical directors Brian Ray and John Philip Chanel arranged, produced, and performed most of our music. Mr. Ray was on the guitars, bass, and drums, and Mr. Chanel handled orchestration and keyboards. Produced by TKO Brothers. Other music, including some of the Beethoven compositions, arranged and performed by the group No Horns Allowed. The sports music is the Olderman theme from ESPN2, written by Mitch Warren Davis, courtesy of ESPN Inc. Our satirical and pithy musical comments are by Nancy Faust, the best baseball stadium organist ever. Our announcer today was, and this was a preview of my reference to Carl Bernstein, our announcer today was my friend John Dean. Everything else was pretty much my fault. That's Countdown for this 232nd day until the 2024 presidential election and the 1,169th day since I hope Donald Trump dies in prison after being convicted and his first attempted coup against the democratically re-elected government of the United States. Use the 14th Amendment and the not regularly given elector objection option. Use the Insurrection Act. Use the justice system. Use the mental health system to stop him from doing it again while we still can. The next scheduled countdown is tomorrow. Bolton's as the news warrants. Never believe anything you read in the New York Post, Fox News, or see on Fox News. Till then, I'm Keith Olbermann. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and good luck. Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax, Terminix can help. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast. If your home or business has pests, don't stress it. Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's T-E-R-M-I-N-I-X.com.